The online home remodeling platform House reported a boom in pandemic home remodeling over the summer. Kitchen and bath projects up. That yearning for a home office, please. Home additions spike. And here's one. Security and privacy remodels like fencing, triple digit year-over-year growth. So what home projects have you poured time and money into? How many trips have you made to your hardware store du jour? Have you done a DIY home project since the pandemic started? How did it go? What did you do? DIY questions right here, 800-642-1234. Danny Lipford is a contractor and home improvement expert. He's the host of today's homeowner TV and radio shows. Danny, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
All right. So what are you seeing out there? What are some of the most popular home improvement projects that people are trying to do amid the pandemic?
Well, I think more people have turned to gardening and landscaping than ever before. Everybody loves plants. They know what it can do to a home to make it better. But I think the idea, first of all, we've had a lot more time. It's something that you can spend just a little bit of money and make a big impact on your home. But also, I think there's a little bit of comfort there. There's something that's, you know, kind of like a warm blanket maybe is a way that people are realizing when they plant, it just makes their home a little cozier, which is kind of what everybody wants these days.
Well, curb appeal is certainly important there and therapeutic. Danny, we're getting snow this week. So,
Oh, boy.
yeah. So it's already started. But, you know, what are some tips that you have for us to winterize our homes and make sure that we're able to retain heat where we need it in Wisconsin?
Well, before it gets really, really cold, it's a great idea to take a slow walk around the outside of your home and think of it like a sweater, or think of it like an envelope, and you want to seal up every single crack you possibly can. Now, you might see a little crack by the window. You might see a little space under your door and go, how could that possibly affect my heating bill this winter? Well, if you were able to put all of those little cracks together, you know, physically, you might end up with as much as a 3-foot by 3-foot window open all winter long. So that emphasizes how important it is around hose bibs, around windows, around doors, where your evaporative lines come out of your house, or anything that's penetrating the envelope of the home. Seal it up with caulk. And another good thing here, Kate, is that there are over 200 colors of caulking available now. So where in the past you put the white on there and you had to, you know, look at that white color versus your color of your siding, now you can actually buy caulk that's the same color as your siding, so that all you have to do is seal it up and not have to worry about it anymore. That's just one of a number of ways just to tighten the envelope of the house up.
Yeah, and that certainly is handy, too, when you're talking tile color as well and managing, looking at those colors. You know, you also use expandable foam. When do you turn to using expandable foam?
Well, anytime you have especially on a vertical surface, like around a hose bib, an outside faucet, or any place that the gap is just, let's say, over a half inch, then it's a lot better to use that. Also, if you have any gaps that you can see around your windows and doors that'll allow you, especially when you're installing new ones or doing some modifications, any gap that you have around there, that the foam is really good. But you have to be careful. It does expand significantly, and it can warp some of your trim and so forth. So you have to be a little bit careful with that. But any void that you have like that you can fill with the foam, you're certainly moving ahead in being able to winterize your home.
Talking with home improvement expert Danny Lipford. He's with us. He hosts a TV show that offers practical advice on maintaining and improving homes. Are you knee-deep in a DIY home project? What type of improvement is going on? How is the process going? How is your budget doing? Have you run into anything that you need some advice on with your home? Join in at 800-642-1234. Now, Danny, I know budget can also be an issue here, especially as you think you start with a small project and then it just keeps growing and growing. This happened to me in a bathroom. I thought I was just, you know, doing one thing, and then suddenly it was that led to another thing. So how do you try to make sure that you're not cutting corners, but you're also putting an adequate budget to what you want to try to do?
Well, it is hard to draw the line a lot of times, particularly on inside remodeling, because you I hear a lot of people say, well, all I wanted to do is just remove this wall. Well, all of a sudden you have ceilings, you have walls, and you have floors that you have to deal with in addition to all of the cosmetic part of that. So, I mean, that's one of those things you really have to do your research to know what you might run into. Certainly when you're dealing with the bathroom, there's a big chance you'll run into some damaged wood behind the wall.
Yep.
And what happens so much, though, you just get caught up in it. You just say, oh, man, this looks so good. I'm going to do the other room and the other room. And so a lot of that extending over your budget is just because we're having fun and we're liking the results and we want more, more, more. So you have to kind of draw the line there personally more than anything else so that you can do it. And also think of a lot of people are doing projects in stages. Some projects you can't do that way, but the outdoor projects is one that you can go and create a nice little patio, let's say a 10 by 12 patio, a modest patio, and you can enjoy it during that weekend. And then later on, you might have the time and budget will allow you to maybe double the size of that and maybe add a water feature. So there's a lot of people that if you have that master plan in mind, what you want to end up with, and you do it a little stage at a time, that helps your budget. That also gives you that little pat on the back along the way so that you will want to continue to do it. And the key thing, you don't end up frustrated because that's no fun at all.
Well, and it's interesting you say that because, you know, I just keep this master list and each little thing on that list that I really want to accomplish, I just, you know, I'm able to cross it off. And I'm thinking mainly here on the painting front. I'm a big on painting updates, and I want to get your take a little bit on painting. You know, when you're looking at interior painting, I there's a lot of different approaches to that. But first of all, are you a brush person or a roller guy?
Well, I like the roller. I can cut in pretty well with the brush, but I guess I'm so hyped up. I need to see some progress a lot quicker than a brush provides me. So I enjoy if I have someone that's cutting in along the edge there and I can do the rolling, I like that. But, you know, one little technical thing there that happens with a lot of people is they will go in with a paintbrush and they'll paint all around the trim, paint all around the baseboard. Then maybe an hour or so later, they pick up the roller and roll that. That's really not what you want to do. You want that paint to be wet. When you're rolling up to that area that you have trimmed around the baseboard or the windows or so forth, you want it to still be wet. So it's better to, if you're doing it by yourself, it's better to do a little bit of cut in, set the brush down, do a little bit of rolling, then go back to the brush. So that's just one little small thing that I see a lot of homeowners making that mistake. And what ends up happening is that paint just doesn't blend in those, even though it's the same paint, the texture of the roller and the texture of the brush is just a little bit different. So that's a good tip to keep all of the seams wet as you're doing the paint job.
Okay, so how do I choose the nap on my roller?
Well, it depends a lot on the surface that you're painting. I mean, okay. If you're, in the Wisconsin area, you have a lot of plaster and, slightly rougher type of walls. You're going to step up to a half-inch roller there. And if you have an ultra-smooth surface, like many ceilings, then you would want to go with a 3/8-inch nap. Or if you have a wall, maybe there's just a few imperfections here and there. Nothing wrong with stepping up to a 3/4-inch nap, which will actually provide you just a slight texture on the wall that it'll still look smooth and it'll still be cleanable and all, but it does provide a little bit of ability for you to hide any of those imperfections.
Danny Lipford, general contractor, longtime host of today's Homeowner TV radio shows. He's sharing practical advice with us on our reno projects. Are you considering painting a room? Or perhaps you want to remove wallpaper put up by the last homeowner? Tell us about your project. Ask your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Danny Lipford here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're getting home maintenance and renovation advice as we head into the darker winter months. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've heard contractors are more likely to take outdoor rather than indoor projects amid the pandemic. But you might pick up that hammer and don a tool belt and do the project yourself. Must say those YouTube videos have been super helpful. What renovation advice do you need help with? Join in 800-642-1234. Danny Lipford is our guide, a general contractor, longtime host of today's homeowner TV and radio shows. He stays with us. Let's bring in Mary, who's joining us from Bayfield County. Hi, Mary. I understand you're installing carpet.
Yeah, well, we're trying to anyway. We're pretty handy, so we've been able to do a lot of the projects ourselves, but we found just a lack of available subcontractors, carpeters, sheetrock people. You know, it's always been a problem as far north as we are getting people to do work, but now since the pandemic, it's been even harder. And so, I don't know, it's not as much a question as just a comment, and kind of want to do a shout out. If anyone is looking for work in the trades, they might want to consider moving on up here.
It's a situation, Mary, too, where you can't even get multiple quotes on a single project. You can't even, for instance, compare quotes.
No, absolutely not. There's basically one person that's available for carpet laying, and we ordered the carpet a couple months ago, and he will not be able to get here until January. And likewise, with the drywall situation, we literally cannot find anyone to do it.
Mm. Danny, any advice there for Mary not being able to find the subcontractors?
Well, Mary, I certainly have heard this from people all over the country with everybody being so busy now and the increase on their schedules. And, of course, the bigger problem is there's not enough people that are in the trades. That was identified several years ago, and there's a lot of the vocational schools are working hard to try to fill those roles and make it a more desirable, business for someone to enter into, whether it be plumbing, electrical, or some of the other trades. I would recommend always contacting your local Home Builders Association. They have associate members that are drywallers, that are remodelers, and a lot of people there. So that's always a good source because they do have a screening process. So you're starting with the top of the heap there. I would also look at the suppliers, just let's say for drywall, for instance, whoever is providing that drywall, talk to those suppliers and say, hey, can you give me a few names? And just kind of be very diligent in going after where they're doing business with, and they'll tell you the guys that are doing things right and maybe give you a few names that you can go to. But it is very, very frustrating, but just keep pushing and keep hammering away on those phones.
Mm. Mary, thanks for the call. You know, Mary's talking flooring, Danny. What are some of the more inexpensive but popular flooring options that are good for DIYers?
Oh, I'll tell you, the whole flooring world is focused on luxury vinyl planks and luxury vinyl tile. Pretty amazing stuff. I have installed lots and lots and lots of it, and it's very, very thin. Generally, it will be like 6 inches wide by 4 feet long. There's all kinds of wood patterns and ceramic tile patterns, just about anything that you would want. You do have to have a fairly smooth floor, whether it's wood or concrete. And then basically it's just taking a notch trowel and just applying just a little bit of glue. I mean, you're not putting much down. And then you just, get a good straight line and you just start working both sides of that line. Good parts about it, you only need a razor knife and a straight edge in order to cut it. So it's very, very do-it-yourself friendly. And we have seen many, many homeowners embrace that. On my radio show, I get calls every single week about people using in just about any area of the home. You can go with the basement, you can go with the kitchen, bath,
yep.
Anywhere. It really does pay off. And it holds up very, very well.
Yeah, we put that vinyl plank in our basement and been really, really pleased with it. Looks good too. I mean, this one has a particular wood grain to it. It's a gray, but it looks nice and it's really holding up. So I'm really pleased with that. We heard from Matt in Wausau email to say he started building a small cabin right during the pandemic at the start. Matt was able to complete the whole project without going into the home supply store like a Menards. And Matt ordered the materials online. Matt says the stuff from inside the store, you can have them put it from the shelves, bring it to your car. The lumber yard is outside. Distancing is easy. Matt called the whole process a win-win. So that's quite an achievement, a small cabin.
Well, absolutely, and good for him. And that's a project of passion when you build something like that. And just think of not only all of the great times he'll have at the cabin, but knowing that he nailed every nail and put every board up, that's just icing on the cake there. That makes a big, big difference. But, you know, shopping online, I just finished building a brand new home. And my last home that I built, I lived in for 29 years. So this is a really, really cool place that I built. But I was absolutely amazed at how many materials that my wife purchased online with bathroom vanities and, you know, all kinds of accessories, just things that you wouldn't imagine that you could get. And then, of course, the researching online of the other products that we bought that had to be shipped in. It is amazing. You have to have the right attitude. You have to have a little patience. But overall, you can save a lot of money and you really end up saving time in the long run.
We're talking with Danny Lipford about DIY home projects. He's a contractor, host of Today's Homeowner, and you can join in with your questions about the projects you're tackling at home. What are you working on? How's the process been going? Have you run into questions that you need answered? Join in 800-642-1234. You know, Danny, you mentioned vanities, and, you know, I'm looking to replace a vanity, but it occurred to me first that I need to understand what the tile looks like underneath the vanity. So I need to drill a little hole, get a flashlight in there, and see if the tile is in good repair before I rip out that vanity. Anything else that I should think about?
Well, if you're putting in a vanity, you want to think of it as certainly a long-time installation. So you want to make sure any of the plumbing and the cutoff valves and the drain are all in good shape. And, you know, a lot of vanities, there's a lot of open vanities. So if you're having one that you're going to actually see that plumbing, then you probably would consider replacing it. Now, that can be tricky because you're going to have to turn all the water off to the house. And many times that's something that does require the skill of a plumber to take care of. But either way, you don't want to end up with a beautiful, nice, brand new vanity and then see plumbing that's 50 or 60 years old. So those are some of the things you want to make sure of so that you don't have any problems whatsoever once you get that pretty vanity in. But I'll tell you, we have four bathrooms in the house, and three of them she ordered these sets. So you had the vanity, you had the beautiful granite top, you had the mirror that goes overhead, and the light fixture all matched perfectly. The quality really blew me away, and it came right in a box, and we had it installed in no time. So that was something that I was the old skeptic, that there's no way that this is going to be up to the level of quality that we want in our new home. But I was wrong. It is just awesome. So it really is a good way to go about doing a lot of these projects yourself. And, you know, since it is all matched up, and it takes a little bit of that pressure away from you if you're not comfortable as a homeowner to choose colors and styles to go together, it's kind of easy when they've done all that work for you.
Yeah, they bundle it. You've got the bundle, and then it's just about those steps of installation. You know, in that bathroom you're talking about, what if you're trying to remove wallpaper? What's the best way to remove old wallpaper?
Oh boy, I'll tell you.
Is that a can of worms or what?
Well, I have figured it out. And the formula is on our website at todayshomeowner.com. Just go to todayshomeowner.com and put in remove wallpaper. But essentially what we do, first of all, you take your little paper tiger and you perforate, you know, it rolls around on the surface of the wallpaper to poke thousands of little tiny holes in the surface of the paper. That way, when you apply the solution I'm about to mention, it will get to the glue. So that's what you're trying to do, is get to the adhesive that's behind there. So then you take a pump-up sprayer and the hottest water you can find. You take a small container of wallpaper remover, which is the only brand I know is Diff, D-I-F-F.
Yeah.
You pour that in there. You pour a little fabric softener in there. You pour a little vinegar in there. And you pour a little bit of baking soda in there. All right, so you mix this up. And then you go in and cover everything up because you want it as wet as you can possibly get it. So you just wet everything down. Then you take the thin painter's plastic, the real thin plastic, and you cut pieces and just stick it to the wall. Because of it being wet, it will adhere to the wall very, very easily. And you cover all of the wallpaper up with this, and that's it. You're through for the day. Go have a nice cup of hot tea. Then the next morning with your 6-inch drywall knife, it will practically peel itself off the wall. And I don't care if it has 5 layers of paper on it, which we've dealt with that before, but it is truly amazing what that does. And all of the different materials that you're putting in there all are doing a certain thing to help release that. And it is amazing. I've never seen anything work any better than that.
Danny Lipford, contractor, fielding all your questions on DIY home projects, wallpaper included. Are you a contractor or work in the home improvement industry? What's business been like? Can you get to all the jobs? What types of projects have you been doing? What advice can you give for homeowners trying to tackle projects? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Danny Lipford right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Like everyone else, you've been spending lots of time at home, and you've probably become well acquainted with all its flaws and quirks. We're talking DIY projects on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Americans spend more than $400 billion a year on residential renovations and repairs. Danny Lipford is a contractor fielding your questions for the hour. Nancy has a question on tiling, about her tiling project in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. About 15 years ago, possibly even more, I bought many boxes of this, of the tile for the kitchen floor that comes with an adhesive already on the back of the tile covered with a sheet of paper. Well, I never did get all that any of that tile put down. And I'm assuming that the adhesive is at least somewhat dried out, maybe even entirely dried out. So I'd like to ask your guest if he could give me the brand name of an adhesive that I could have installed on the, spread out on the floor with this toothed applicator that he mentioned earlier. So because I would need to know that these two adhesives or mastic are going to be compatible and hold the tile down.
Yeah, Nancy, thanks. Can she salvage these tiles?
I think so. Nancy, I believe you would be able to, first of all, you want to get any paper or anything that might come loose. You'd want to go ahead and get it off of there. And most likely the glue is dead, so you're not going to be able to use what's on there. But really all you need to use is a very common product called Thinset. It's a thin set adhesive, and there's many companies that make it, but you can buy it right off the shelves of the home center. And what you'll need to do in terms of the notch trowel, you'll need to look on the bag of thin set, and it will say if you have an 8-inch by 8-inch tile, use this trowel, which would probably be like a 3/8 by 3/8 inch notch. So you'll need to see on the exact adhesive that you buy what they recommend based on the size of tile you have. It's very, very easy to get that information, and then you'll be ready to go with it. But I love it when someone doesn't throw things away and that they end up are able to use it a little bit later. So good for you.
Yeah, Nancy, thanks. And good luck. Let's go to Laura now in Madison. Laura, hi.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Danny, like the previous caller, my question is about a tile project. We're building our own cabin, and we've already put the Adoni slate on the floor, but now we're looking at the walls, and my family is asking, do we have any other options besides using the thin set? We have some large format wall tiles that like are 16 by 24 or something like that. And the daughters who are helping us said, can we put an adhesive tape on the wall and stick the tiles to instead of using the thin set mortar? And if yes, Does that mean that we're mounting those tiles from the top down versus the bottom up? We have 9-foot walls in this shower area. So the question is, do we have the option of using something different than the thin set mortar for those large plank tiles on the shower walls?
Okay, that's a good question. And certainly you do. I'll tell you, construction adhesive in a caulking tube, a good quality one, you can use it very easily. But you can start at the bottom, and then you can use the little tile spacers, whatever size grout joints you want, to basically stack one on top of the other. So you're able to actually take that tile and apply the adhesive either to it or to the wall. But here's a little trick. Once you put that tile in place, push it into the glue, then pull that tile back off about an inch. And it we call it burping the glue. But it's just what it's doing is it's allowing air to get into that fibers, and it will really hold, and it'll hold quickly. So, yes, you can certainly do that and tile it all up. Then you can apply your grout to it. I would recommend once you apply your grout, if you're not using a grout that is a stain-resistant grout, then I would apply a clear sealer over the grout, particularly in a shower area. But it works really, really well. One other thing is something called Simple Mat. A Simple Mat. It's from Custom Building Products, and it is a double stick tape, like you were speaking that your daughter mentioned, but it comes in large sheets. So you apply it to the wall, push it in a little bit, then you peel the cover off, and then you're able to stick the tile straight to that. So just Google, go to custombuildingproducts.com, or you could just Google Simple Mat. It's really interesting. I just used some on a project out in California just last week.
And those tiles will hold with that type of adhesive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Amazing. It really is. You push it into it a little bit. It's real thin, but by pushing it into it, you're activating all of the glue on the surface of it, and it'll hold really, really well.
Laura, thanks. Good luck. Let's go to Peng now in Calumet County. Hi, Peng.
Hi there. I have a question with insulating a sunroom. Previous owner turned into a room, and then we removed the carpeting and everything, and the wood floor, there's a draft coming from underneath. So how do I go about insulating from underneath the sunroom?
Do you have access under there? Can you physically get under in order to do that?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, well, I'll tell you what you want to use. You want to use something called mineral wool or stone wool, and brand name on that would be rock wool. And it's a global company. Very interesting, because the material it's great in areas that could possibly have some humidity, because it won't mold, it won't mildew, it's resistant to any kind of insect. It's extremely easy to work with. You can take a cake knife and cut it up, and it's so easy to use. And then you can use little tension rods, little bitty thin tension rods, to hold it in place. And it'll make a world of difference in there, and you'll only have to do it once.
Peng, does that sound good to you?
Definitely. Yeah, I was thinking about, insulating with, the Pink Panther stuff, but that's an option I haven't thought of.
Well, thanks for the...
It's a lot better to go with that mineral wool because of the moisture issues. And once you use it, you'll see just how easy it is. But you can look it up at rockwool.com and find out all the details on it.
We're talking about do-it-yourself here on The Morning Show. We have Danny Lipford. He's a contractor remodeling expert, taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Andy in Verona has a question. Hi, Andy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about a plan to put a hot tub probably sunken into our existing deck. And I was wondering about about the setbacks for that to the edge of the deck or to the railings, if the guest has any information about what those setback requirements are. And sort of as a second point to that, if I have to get too close to the railing, the deck isn't very high off the ground, so I'm wondering what the minimum height is or maximum height for the deck in order to possibly remove the railing from the deck.
All of the codes there, there is a universal code that will dictate a lot of that, but certainly you'll need to check in the municipality or county that you're in on any other addendum to that code. I think 30 inches high is where you are required to have a handrail after that, and a handrail will generally need to be 36 inches high. But when you're talking about a swimming pool or a hot tub, then in many areas that requires a 42-inch rail, and they really get particular about that because of the dangers of a small child getting in there, and even requiring a gate that has a self-latching gate latch that you can't reach. It's up 48 inches tall. So there's a lot of regulations in there from that standpoint, if you're getting a permit and if you're wanting to comply with those codes, which is certainly a safety issue. But and as far as the how close you can get to the edge, I think you can get as close as you want to the edge. It's how close you get to the house is where there will be some regulations that dictate that.
Outside the regulations, what is installation like for a homeowner on a hot tub? Is it pretty straightforward?
Well, you have to do the math. They are very, very heavy. If you have something there that's holding 300 gallons at 8 pounds per gallon, you're over a ton before you even weigh the tub itself and throw two or three people in there. So you really have to know what you're doing there and making sure you have just overkill in terms of supporting that. If your deck is closer to the ground, like you mentioned, then you have the opportunity to pour a small slab under there, and that will distribute the weight out, and you should be in really, really good shape. I would consider a handrail going in and out of that tub, because when one is sunken down like that, if you don't have a rail for some people to help them in and help them out, it can be kind of problematic for some.
Yeah, so really looking at what clearance you have underneath that deck to figure out how to really maximize and make sure that you can have enough supports there to hold what that hot tub is going to need. You know, as you look at the deck, are there any things, if you're building a deck, that you should keep in mind? I know math is really important with building a deck.
Yeah, certainly. Well, number one, it's how you attach it to the house, if you're attaching it to the house. Mm-hmm. A lot of the deck mishaps that we've heard over the years have simply been because that ledger board is not sufficiently tied to it. Just sometimes people will put a few screws or nails in it and assume that will take care of it. But when you're having that party out there and you may have, 5, 10, or 20 people out there, there's a tremendous amount of weight, a tremendous amount of push away from the house when you have that ledger. So that's number one. And if you're a novice carpenter and have not done a lot of that work, you really need to research the spans and understanding just how much wood that you're going to have to put in there. And certainly, and when you're talking about an area like Wisconsin, when you're going to be dealing with a lot of snow and ice, you're going to have to build some pretty substantial footings to take care of that so that there's no shifting that takes place during that really, really cold time of the year.
We're running our home DIY projects through contractor Danny Lipford. What projects are you tackling while at home? 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. Back in a minute with Danny Lipford here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with home improvement expert and contractor Danny Lipford. He's helping us with our building projects. Let's go to Pete now in Wales with a question. Hi, Pete. What's going on in your basement?
Hi. I want to insulate my basement. I have a ranch. It was built in 1970. It's totally uninsulated, and I've been thinking about using a styrofoam, the pink styrofoam, a 2-inch, and simply gluing it solidly all the way around the perimeter of the basement. Does that sound feasible, or would that be locking up moisture possibly in the cement block, or what are your thoughts?
No, I think that's a great way to go. Actually, I did the same thing in a basement area of my previous house. I actually used 1.5 inches because I nailed my 2x4s directly to the concrete, which are 1.5 inches. So it was a nice, smooth very solid wall, worked very, very well. However, out of abundance of caution, I also waterproofed the concrete blocks just so that if there was ever a chance that water was going to get in there, the waterproofing would stop that. So it's basically just rolling on two thin coats of some waterproofing product, and then immediately you can glue and nail or screw your 2x4s right to the wall, and then cut your foam to go in between. Works really, really well. While you're at it, go ahead and just caulk it in tight. Just create a complete barrier, top and bottom, and then you'll be ready to put on any paneling or any drywall onto that.
Are there any concerns, though, about air circulation in that basement if you seal it up too tightly?
Not really. Okay. As long as you, if it is, you're going to have some heating or cooling or something in there that
sure.
will be moving the air and controlling the relative humidity. But you would want to make sure that you don't have moisture migrating in there in any way. Because that's the biggest problem with basements. You want to keep that relative humidity down below 50%. So a little simple $10 hygrometer can tell you exactly how that's working.
Let's go to Jeff in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
We're doing a bunch of renovations in our house. We got some DIY, some contractors, but we're doing some floors. We're doing plaster work. And it's just putting up a lot of dust. And we're about ready to finish up and clean. And we're wondering what the best order or what the best strategy of attack for cleaning up that dust is.
Well, I always think of it as from the top down. I will take a broom or sometimes even a sponge mop, depending on the type of ceiling that we have, and just start at the top and just start working your way down all of the crown molding, all of that. If you have the opportunity to have a fan of any kind blowing straight to the outside, maybe prop it up in a window or a door so that you're creating that positive air going to the outside, then that will also help as you're cleaning to minimize the amount of dust that you have there. And, you know, if you're using any type of shop vac, you want to make sure you clean that filter really well or pick up a brand new one. That will help a lot, too, with between the wiping down and the vacuuming will work very, very well. It's tough, though. I mean, it's always tough because that the dust will get into places you never imagined it would get into. But with that approach and being diligent on that and having a little extra hands in there, you can get it good and clean.
Yeah, that's like the best part, though, knowing that you're in the home stretch and all that is left is the cleanup. That must feel really
right.
Good, Jeff.
We're getting there.
Let's bring in Nancy now in Middleton. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. We have a 20-year-old house with cement block basement, and I've always wondered, it's not refinished, but it would look better with the walls painted, but my husband doesn't have any confidence in the paint holding up, and I wondered what your thoughts were and if there were any product that you would recommend.
Well, absolutely. I'll tell you, one of the things you'd want to do there, Nancy, first is get some TSP, that's trisodium phosphate. It's a big, long word, but it's something that's available in any paint store or any home center, and it'll have the directions on it. It's basically just a cleaner. So then you're wanting to clean that surface really well. You can just use a scrub brush or anything on an extension handle and make it very, very easy. Allow that to dry. And then one product that I've used, and it's available in a latex now, is called Dry Lock, and it's a UGL product. And follow the directions, and what I generally do is put two light coats on it. You just want to cover everything up. First of all, immediately you have a sense of gratification because you got this nice white wall. Now, it's also available in a bone color, but you have that, and you're probably done. You probably won't even need to paint it again put any additional paint on it unless you want a different color. And if so, then you allow it to dry a couple of days, and you paint right over it. And it's very effective in soaking into the pores of that masonry and sealing out any moisture that's there and also allowing it to really hold up well on that wall. Because it does soak in so well. So it's worked very, very well for me in many, many projects that I've done. I think you'll see that it works really well for you guys.
Nancy, you're going to take the leap?
I think that sounds wonderful. But did you say I'm stuck with white unless I want to unless I want to paint over it with just a regular latex paint?
Yes, it's available in a bone color and white. So it's off-white or white is all they have in the waterproofing. But to paint over that with an acrylic latex paint, it will adhere to it very, very well and will just last forever.
Now, there's a couple of spots where there's some salt buildup. Will that be taken care of with the TSP?
Yes, that would be efflorescence, that calcium deposit, and TSP will completely eliminate all of that. And that's an important part of it because that's there because moisture is getting through that block. So, again, get rid of the efflorescence and come back with these two coats of dry log, and you're done. That's it. You won't have to worry about it again.
Nancy, thanks. We're talking with Danny Lipford here, helping us with DIY projects around the house. Let's bring in Jerry now in Green Bay. Hi, Jerry. What's going on at your old farmhouse?
Hey, I got an old farmhouse that I completely remodeled quite a few years ago. But anyway, I want to fix up the basement. I'm listening to you talk about like this dry lock and stuff like that. But I have a fieldstone basement. And, you can... Sometimes the back plaster does come off, and I want to, use steel studs and insulate it. So I was thinking of maybe just, taking half-inch styrofoam to begin with, stacking it up against the wall and taping the seams, and then putting the steel studs to hold that up and then insulate them. I don't know how to go about this because the basement's dry, but you can see, things where, that last lady had that salt build up and stuff like that. So how do I go about that? What do you think?
Well, I would still, regardless of how you're building, the way you're talking about building, it sounds fantastic. But I would still apply those two coats of the waterproofer so that you just have that barrier against any water infiltration. Now, it won't keep out all of the all leaks if you have a severe amount of water building up behind those walls. But for the efflorescence and any of the things there that you may see, it'll completely eliminate all of that. So I would still put the two thin coats on there. It only takes just a short amount of time. You do want some fairly good ventilation in there while you're doing that. And it is a water-based material now, so it's easy cleanup and won't mess things up. And just apply those two coats and then proceed with the foam and the steel studs, and you'll be glad that you did. Because the thing is, you won't get another chance to do that. Now's the time that you can apply that, and then you'll have that comfort level for all the years ahead.
Jerry, thank you so much for the call. Wow, Danny, you've really plowed through here. Is there any last tip or advice that you can leave us with in the last few seconds?
Well, I certainly think that I love that everybody is getting more involved in home improvement, and we certainly have seen a surge in our business with our television show and radio show and website. Don't be too ambitious. Take it a step at a time on any project that you're doing, and you want to, do it just a little at a time, just so that once you get one thing under your belt, you can go to something else. And I always like to suggest to people, use your time and talents, if you can, to help someone else out. If you've got someone in the military that has been in the military that you can help out with your time and talents, or an elderly person or someone that's a little physically challenged, do that. And I'm telling you, you'll feel better than working on your own home.
Danny, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. It was always good to be with you, Kate.
Danny Lipford, contractor, home improvement expert. Just ahead, it is 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.